Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host and producer is Sophie Schlesinger.
Hello.
And in the booth, we have the very talented Jack Inslee on sound effects and music and pretty much everything else. He's just keeping everything together. Today's show, we are very excited to be here with the ladies extraordinaire from Edible Manhattan, Gabrielle Langholz, who is the editor, and Rachel Wharton, who
Hello.
Is the deputy editor.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Not the Joe Biden.
Not yet, well, maybe.
We have to come up with another thing. If
I'm assassinated.
I can arrest you as the deputy. I'm allowed.
Rachel's actually in charge, unlike Joe Biden. Please not be the Obama in this analogy? Okay, sorry.
Okay. Batman and Robin, then. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm greatly exceeding expectations.
Yeah. There's all kinds of great teams. Beavis and Butthead.
That's true, I love milk and cheese
Ren and Stimpy, if we're gonna go the Nickelodeon route. That weirded me out when I was a kid.
Taking me back.
They did have Powdered Toast Man, which is not dairy related, but we are here to talk about the dairy issue of Edible Manhattan, which just came out, the good dairy issue. Can you guys tell us what was the inspiration behind devoting a whole entire issue to dairy?
I was trying to remember. Rachel, do you?
None at all.
Have you done any other themed issues like that, like beer or spirits or, you know?
Well, last year, being 2011, depending on when you air this, just kidding. Last year was we did our first special theme issues, and we do alcohol, and we did the meat issue, which was so much fun to put together.
Yeah.
And
design.
And Eat Local, the travel issue, and then at the end of the year, we did the design issue. That's right. So this year, we kept that same lineup, but we swapped out the meat issue, which was I had a blast working on. And this year, we decided that it would be really fun to do a whole issue about dairy, which I felt like it was a really good fit with our makeup of content, like our content mix, because there's so much history to talk about with dairy in New York. There's so much melting pot kind of stuff to talk about. Like we talk about some cool Latino cheeses and...
Well, it's like any of our theme issues, you can kind of use dairy and cheese and milk as a lens to talk about every single aspect of New York City. Is pretty fun and
tons
exciting.
Of locavore content, of course, entrepreneurial innovation, also looking at like a big iconic brand like Murray's, for example, or also like a badass upstart like yourself, for example. And I just had a blast. Like there's just so much cool stuff going on with dairy, both on the production side, like the agriculture side, and also on the culinary and eating side.
Which is a big deal for New York State, because New York State is a huge producer of dairy products. But I feel like, you know, in the last like 20 years or so, it's been really tough for people.
I wrote the profile of Murray's for this issue, which
rocks.
I should have interviewed you for that, but I figured you would have your say.
If you're like 9-page feature.
But I reread, do you remember that you probably were even working there when this article came out in the New Yorker, where it was like a big profile of Rob, the owner of Murray's.
2006, maybe?
It was 2006 or 2007, and just the way they were describing, like, all of a sudden, restaurants that don't have white tablecloths are serving cheese, and they were like, and there's even locally made cheese, and that wasn't even that long ago. It's mind-blowing to me how much it's changed.
I know. Right. It's like somebody just opened the spigot, then all this great milk and cheese came pouring right out of it. And yogurt. I was so excited you guys did the Chobani guy.
We've mentioned
you were
that a few
okay.
times.
Great, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah,
tell me why.
Well, just because you know we've had some people on our show. Actually, one dairy farmer in particular. Her name is Lorraine Lewandowski. She is a prolific Twitter.
That's okay. That's just what I was about to. Okay, you go ahead, and then I have something to say about her.
And you know,
she's NY Dairy Farmer with the green square.
Yeah,
I love you.
That's
if you're listening.
That's her little logo is a green square.
Yeah, we first heard her on your show. Yeah, and I was like head over heels.
She knows so much about the inner workings of the dairy industry, and I thought made such a good case for the fact that this doesn't have to be all about the small scale, super boutique, super expensive cheese that's being produced. It's about just keeping dairy farms in business,
right? And creating or doing business good, in slightly different ways,
good quality product for not too much money, which is what was so impressive about Chobani, because they started what, 3 years ago, 4 years right. ago, and now they're
it's a supermarket. It's very mainstream.
Yeah
And they're a huge boon to the upstate dairy economy. And it's so interesting that you're bringing that up to me, because I literally think that I cried listening to that interview. Like, it was a real kind of soul-searching moment for me. And I was working on the dairy issue at the time. When was that? Like, December?
It was in
October, I think.
October, yeah.
Oh, it was back. For, you know what? I listened to the podcast. What'd you say? Oh, it was Occupy Wall Street. Right. It was the woman from the episode. OWS Kitchen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I listened to it later, like, while I was working on the lineup for this issue. And I felt like she was talking to me. Like, she... And honestly... I'm really proud of the issue that we put out, but I don't feel like I did justice to kind of the epiphany that I had talking to her, because she just blew me away. Okay, what's her name?
Lorraine.
Lorraine, will you please write an op-ed for me someday, okay, next year. But she said, she talked about this real kind of disconnect between the urban consumer who... like the upstate downstate prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, she basically was like, Gabrielle Langholz, you are not considering these upstate farms that produce commodity milk that aren't certified organic, that are really at the center of the New York State agricultural economy. And just because they're not like boutique-y, you're not giving them props, and they're really central to this economy and this agricultural system.
Right.
And I was like, I was changing my whole content, and I felt like I didn't bring it there, but it really got me thinking.
Yeah. Well, it could be, you know, version 2.0 next year. And hopefully there'll be even more hopeful stories, because I feel like the yogurt thing upstate has really taken. I know that other companies,
Faya,
and even what did we hear? There was one other place that was going to buy.
I think it was like a Pepsi owned.
Really? Big mainstream operations that huge differences in the states.
They buy so much, and with Greek yogurt, they just buy. It's like because it's all skim and because uses a lot of milk, which I didn't know until I was working on that story.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you go about developing the content? Because it is kind of daunting. I mean, a subject like dairy. Like, how did you decide, you know,
what to cover? Well, we couldn't possibly be exhaustive. Let me just say right now, like, it's not encyclopedia, but we just do, like, a mind meld. And
it's also kind of like any issue. You want a little bit of agriculture and a little bit of pop culture and a little bit of city, a little bit of country. You kind of just want to hit all the...
Upscale, lowbrow.
The marks.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I was very
impressed. And leave enough for issue dairy V2.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was very impressed, Rachel, by your article about Ben's cream cheese.
Me too. Oh, God. Yeah.
That was amazing fact-finding right
there. Do you
there.
Remember Anne Faculty?
Yeah. Yeah, Gabrielle.
I assigned that story to... I forgot about this. I asked Anne if she wanted to write about that like 2 years ago, right?
Uh-huh.
I want to know the backstory for that story, because it is so hard.
I just called 75 times.
Yeah, and he finally hard to get through.
He finally called me back. I think I called him over the period of 3 months.
Oh, he called you?
Yeah, he could.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think he called me back. And I can't remember at this point. But then I talked to Steve Jenkins at Fairway. He's like, why didn't you just tell me you were looking to talk to Jonah?
I was like, oh, he's like, now I have a name.
Steve Jenkins is the gatekeeper.
This is our... I talked to Steve.
I hope Steve's listening to the show, too.
His quotes, sure he is. Like, made the issue. I felt like.
Yeah, it's like every single story.
They are. I have to say, Steve Jenkins, I mean, we're talking about the dairy issue. He
Fairway
deserves
hunger.
A huge... shout out, because Steve Jenkins was like, I feel like, the gateway for all of us cheesemongers who are working now. Definitely me.
He was Steve himself was next to your bed. I remember reading that in your story.
Oh, I had the cheese primer next to my bed.
Himself. I see that everywhere.
That sounds creepy.
That book is everybody has it. You go to any restaurant that has their cookbooks or whatever on the shelf, and it's there.
Yeah.
It always is. And that picture of Steve from like whatever year that was. He looks so cute.
He does.
Whites and his little hair helmet.
It's funny that you say that picture of Steve, because we ended up over on Pages for this issue, which like happens to me every time, because I just have so much to say. And we were deciding what to hold, because we knew we had to hold some Pages, and we were pretty close to holding the Coach Farm story, because we could run that anytime, you know. And we were like, but that has the photo of Steve Jenkins, remember? And I was like, we have to have, we just felt like having his photo in the issue, it needed to be there.
Yes, because he's definitely somebody for Dairy Issue V2.
Oh,
we probably should start on that now, even if it's like 2015.
Yeah. But that's why I wanted to come right out and say it's not exhaustive, because there are so many stories that we wish we could tell, including
Cheddar.
Steve's own. Yeah, exactly.
And Steve, I feel like he just has such a unique perspective on the whole thing, because, back in the late 70s, going down and getting buckets of cream cheese on Houston Street, I mean, that's crazy. But I have to say, he is also one of the funniest people ever, because he moderated the town hall meeting at the American Cheese Society conference. I think it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And it was by far the best town hall meeting anybody had ever had. He called everybody out. And he was like, listen, you guys are boring. This is the most boring group of people I've
quite
ever
a moderator.
Been in a room with. Oh, yeah. It was hysterical. So he's been on the show once or twice. I hope he'll come back at some point.
Does he actually come to Roberta's?
Yeah.
Oh.
Does he tell you you're being boring if you ask him a not exciting question?
He didn't tell me that on the show, but he might have thunk it.
He's one of those people that's very polite. Nothing comes out of his mouth that isn't fascinating, interesting, or just ridiculous. He doesn't say anything. No, he doesn't. He's never just like, I'm fine, how are you? Everything is like a pearl of wisdom.
Yeah.
He's nuts. I love him.
So Steve Jenkins is going to be on the cover of Dairy Issue V2.
Or maybe the centerfold.
Yeah.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah.
Edible centerfold. So cool. That's a
Why
good
don't we
idea.
Have it on
yes. Thank you, Anne.
Thank
I know who's going to be number one.
I know who's going to be right. Right.
Oh my goodness.
You're kind of a centerfold in this one, girl.
Oh my goodness. That was so nice. Thank you guys so much. I have to say, I came back from my wedding/honeymoon, and that was like what was waiting for me, the issue of the magazine. And it was a pretty lovely welcome home present.
Well, we love you.
Oh.
That was one of like the, immediately we knew we had to do a big story on you for our issue. So, and I love what Brian did. Oh my God. A lot of work went into that story.
He started reporting it when you opened.
Yeah. We've been chatting for years. Yeah. Years. And but I love it. The Mark Israel opener. That was like the beginning of it all. I took him to the donut plant. And Mark is so great. He's just, I don't know, he's such a curmudgeon, but a wonderful curmudgeon, and he'll really tell you, tell you how it is. And makes tasty donuts on top of it. So
that's the truth. Yeah. Well, for listeners of this show who might be fans of yours, I highly recommend this very long profile that we ran on Anne Saxelby by Brian Hallwell. And the entire thing can be read at ediblemanhattan.com.
Yes.
And it's one of my favorite stories we've ever run. Terrific read. So,
well, shucks. That is too kind.
It's also one of the longest stories we've ever run.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was like 6,000 words, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is so bonkers.
Do
well,
you justice.
No.
Tell us about this event. Edible is having an event in April.
Yes.
To talk about this dairy issue, which we're really excited to come to. So if you do remember what day it is, my brain is
April
not functioning.
11th.
Are you coming, or are you actually tabling?
We're tabling.
Oh, yeah. Do you have tabling. Awesome. Yeah. Great.
Is that a verb? We're tabling?
Yes, it sure is.
I like it.
No, it is. It is.
I just learned it recently. That's why I'm using it. I like it.
Yes.
It's very like, I know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm obnoxious on top of it.
So you're bringing all the dairy people together.
Yeah. Edible hosts tons of events to bring our pages to life. So we hold our first event, which I can't believe is, I think, 6 years old this year. We have an awesome events director who rocks the whole thing, and Rachel and I just show up and live it up. It's called Brooklyn Uncorked, and that's a wine event with like all the best wineries in New York State and tons of fantastic food too. And that's in Brooklyn. And there's a Good Spirits event too, which is typically in Manhattan.
Okay, Good Spirits happen. I think Good Spirits
twice a year
is seasonal. We do four.
Four.
It's one for each season. And they're all, it's cocktails and pairings. And
sounds good a lot to of, me.
Right. I mean, actually, I think there are now five gins made in Brooklyn. But those are the type of people that you would see at Good Spirits. Distillers themselves are there in addition to people making drinks and food to go with them. Oh, but I'm sure producers. That the dairy, Sam, our DaVince director, is actually planning it as we speak. But I know that it'll be a lot like the meat themed issue launch party, which is that almost everyone who is in the issue will be there cooking or serving or what we talk about in the issue.
And you get to meet the producer and, you know,
we can't wait
on a whole bunch of excellent food and drinks. It's like the stories in the magazine come to life. Tickets are usually in the ballpark of 40, fountain, 45 bucks.
There'll be a yogurt fountain.
No, I don't
you
think
can
so.
Scale. You'll be able to rappel down a wall.
What?
Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Heat of cheddar.
Well, jump so, into wait, a giant
what's the
pool
giant
of cream?
Wheel for, with a whale on it?
With a whale on it.
The whale's like pressed into the from consider.
Oh, Rupert.
Yeah, yeah. So you'll be there's like a Rupert rolling contest on the street outside.
I've always wanted to have a cheese bowling competition for real.
Oh my god. We should do that's what I want to do. I think I'm gonna
like
my,
turkey
if
bowling.
Sam's rolling her eyes if she's listening right now.
No, I think it's a great idea. We actually talked about that back in the day when I worked at Murray's because we sold lots of Mimolette, and Mimolette is that
aged
little
Gouda.
It's like French aged Gouda, but it's in the shape of like a cannonball.
I think that is the first cheese I ever bought at Murray's.
Really?
I love that you just said that. It's got like caramelly bits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I went to Murray's once when it was, and not even in its first location. I guess it was its second location, which was on the corner.
The tiny street.
And
tiny
I was really, to Murray's once, really yeah. intimidated. I was like, oh my God.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Everyone can
yeah,
see.
That's
like,
true.
Oh, they're all right there. Ah! And I think I never went back until the store was big enough that I could go in and like
hide and play
and breathe a little bit. Yeah. I have to say, I loved when it was in the little spot on the corner of Cornelia and Bleecker.
Yeah.
It was great. The whole place just stunk, you know, in like the best possible way. So like when school kids would walk by, like in the door open, they'd be like, oh, gross. It smells like cheese.
And it's so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, our events are awesome. And you can learn all about them at ediblemanhattan.com. Yeah, that one is April 25th. It's at the Open House Gallery.
On Mulberry Street.
On Mulberry, exactly.
Fantastico.
And actually, Momofuku Milk Bar is going to be there, which I'm really excited about because I just loved telling their story about Christina Tosi's close relationship with Dante Hess and that he shuddered unexpectedly. Just heartbreaking story.
Now, what happened with that? I mean, I read about it in the paper, but so basically it was just a problem of financing with Milk Thistle.
You said it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was Dante Hess of Milk Thistle Farm, was a really unconventional producer raising a small herd of Jerseys. I never found out how old he was, but like 30, you know.
If that.
And
he's young.
Yeah.
With lots of kids
he
already.
Has three kids,
like a real
I think.
Farmer.
Yeah. And raising everybody on grass, bottling
kids
it himself.
Included.
Kids included. Yeah. Grass-fed kids. And so he started selling at the Green Market. I don't know, like 5 years ago.
Yeah, I was still at the Daily News when I remember going up and interviewing for the first time. I think I was
so
still
what year did that
them.
Make it? Do you remember?
Wait, so one thing from that story that really blew my mind was: doesn't Christina say that the soft serve is like literally nothing but his milk?
It's not even heated,
Or even any sugar or anything. I don't know.
No, it's
some
sugar.
But that just blows my mind.
But it's like not reduced.
No
yeah.
cream, no eggs,
Right. Nothing
else.
Yeah. Right. So just an incredible product. Like I interviewed because we just did a little additional reporting for that story by Jamie Feldmeyer. Love that piece. It's our cover story. But so the director of the Green Market, Michael Hurwitz, was like, literally their skim milk tastes like whole milk because of the breed that he's raising or was raising and the way that he was treating the animals, the lives that they lived, and then the way he's treating the product, like just a fantastic product. So Christina Tosi at Momofuku Milk Bar met him at, tasted his stuff, did a big taste test of all the different milks that she could find and went gaga for his stuff, and it was like, you have to sell to me. And he was like, yeah, I didn't return her phone calls because he was like, nobody's going to pay my prices, which are like $7 a pint or whatever.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'll do anything. And, bought 100, ended up buying 100 gallons a week from him for years. And their two businesses just really grew up together. Mm. And
it's kind of an insurmountable thing after a certain amount of time, but it seems like the Momofuku empire would be kind of the perfect, knight in shining armor in a way to
was part of the problem that he spent so much money on that bottling line?
He got in way deep in debt with equipment. Yeah. So he,
which is so hard for all farmers.
And dairy, I feel like especially, is so infrastructure intensive.
Yeah. Infrastructure intensive, perishable as heck. And, you know, just, you know, you need to have a market for it immediately.
Which he did.
Yeah, that's why it's particularly depressing.
Yeah, that's why it's particularly depressing.
If Momofuku, if David Chang cannot save your dairy operation.
Right.
That's, I mean, this is not a, that's bad.
This is someone who was like the poster child of how it could be. And I think that's why it was so devastating to have him shudder, was that we like held him up as this example of success.
Of small scale.
Of possibility. Of small scale. Really, yeah. And for him to be like, people, I can't go on. You know, I'm telling the cows to auction.
Wow, wow.
So,
if he's gonna try to you know keep his farm going in some way or
it seemed like it was
he
gone.
Sold his cows at auction and he's like he went on vacation, which I think is awesome.
Good for him.
And I don't know what the future holds. I mean, Tosi is like, you know, please start farming again.
Yeah,
but I don't know what the future holds for him. I was upstate last week in Hudson, New York at Grayson Diner, which is like this little hamburger joint run by the guys from Grayson Angus.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually still had ice cream from made from from Dante's milk. And I was like,
oh, I wonder if I have a bottle still somewhere in my recycling.
Oh, of milk? Oh, you mean empty bottle?
Yeah, I should keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were talking about, they're friends with him. They play cards with him every Monday night. And we were talking about it. And just, it's a hard road to hoe.
Well, he's a really talented guy. So hopefully he'll find that next opportunity that'll allow him to get back into farming.
Here's hoping.
But so what are you guys looking forward to in dairy? Like,
yeah,
what do you think
next?
As the trend watchers and the, you know, kind of seers of all these different things that are going on with food in the city. Do you see anything kind of starting to happen now that's particularly interesting? Or can you think of some products that you wish that you saw in the market in New York City and you don't see? What are your thoughts about that?
My initial thought is that I would like to see more of, this is really boring, I apologize. I know people wanted to hear me say deliciousness, but I mean, I kind of want to see more New York State working together with farms to produce, to kind of work with the middle area, agriculture of the middle, to create more infrastructure, to actually help farmers like Dante, which I know is happening. I know Cornell is probably on top of this. I know that, I mean, the folks at Murray's have told me that they're working on like a stronger internship. You probably already know this too, like some kind of stronger intern extern program. So I'd like to see that, like what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, like more built around that, which isn't very exciting. I apologize.
No, that's very exciting because to have collective facilities and ways of getting product from upstate to the city,
like the slaughterhouses for the meat folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which like your affinage kind of potential, I would put in that category.
That's true. Yeah, like if you can take on more product earlier, then cheese producers can produce more and get and move more and have more already sold in their on their books.
Yeah, yeah, and especially with the fresh stuff, you know, that's I feel like there's a. From my perspective, there's so much potential in fresh cheese and dairy, you know, things like kefir and cottage cheese and cream cheese. There's still not that much local cream cheese, you know, besides
Ben's.
I've
never seen Locavore cottage cheese, I don't think.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Organic Valley does a nice one, actually, but at the farm, I've never seen
it
at the farmer's market.
We were talking about that earlier today.
Yeah, it's a weird rule. I think the cottage cheese has to be processed. It cannot cross state lines unless it's processed in like a grade A USDA
inspected
facility.
State certified.
Yeah. So that puts up a lot of red tape.
Oh, so that means like DePaulo's could make it, right? USDA certified.
Are they USDA certified?
Yeah.
Wow. Go Lou DePaulo.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I think, yeah, probably.
He's another one who should be in the dairy issue. But have you guys already done an article on
Lou? I need to be taking notes. He's on our list.
We couldn't do him because we did Aleva.
We felt
like
it was.
Right next to
you. Bob.
So we had Lou's next time.
Bob Aleva. He's so great.
And Lou's been
in a bunch of stuff. We buy our mozzarella and ricotta from him.
You do?
Yeah. Awesome. For the shop. Yep. They're great.
Well, in answer to your question about what's new, you won't think this is new. But in writing my letter from the editor, I kind of like took a step back and thought about how young this whole American cheese phenomenon is. And I mean, I learned about that a lot, primarily from editing the story about you. I mean, that blew me away that I think it was something like half of the producers whose product you, whose cheeses you stock didn't even exist 10 years ago. And I was, you know, we really like alliteration. So like silly saying that, but so when I was writing my letter from the editor, I had this silly line about how the old world cheeses are so old. And I said like something silly, like I was kind of on a roll with these this alliteration, but I said like they're like generations of Gruyere,
millennia of Manchego.
Millennia of
that
Manchego.
Was great. I loved
so
it.
So I said, I couldn't help myself, but I said like centuries of Stilton or something. And then I said like, and a millennia of Manchego. And I was like,
that okay, can't be
I'm
right.
going a little bit overboard here. So I was like, someone's going to catch me on this. So I looked it up. Millennia. Multiple millennia of Manchego. It's like before the time of Christ. I swear it was like the Bronze Age they started making Manchego.
Paul Kinstedt can tell us about that.
Yeah. So it wasn't monks. Show. It was like before that.
Right, before the time of Christ.
Yeah.
So that just really left me agape. I literally wanted to put in an asterisk.
Agape.
To be at
nice.
The bottom like, seriously, millennia. I looked it up.
Why didn't you do that?
I love thought asterisks. About it.
We don't use enough.
We didn't use more asterisks. So for me, like that's what's new is American cheese and these producers who are working outside of the commodity system. And I know New York Farmer that the commodity system is also really important for 99% of the producers out there, but to see this kind of artistry and this birth of a tradition,
yeah,
if that's the right
what's the oldest American cheese producer?
Oh, there's some old ones. I mean, Marin French Cheese Company in California, they've been around since like the early 1900s.
Wow.
I'm sure we can find one older than that.
Yeah, but...
I guess Oleva is about that old.
Yeah, they're 100 years.
Yeah, 1892.
But like when, you know, in Coach, telling the story of Coach Farm in the 80s, when they wanted, like there was literally, Laura Chanel was the only producer starting in like 1979.
Yeah, and then Allison Hooper at Vermont Butter and Cheese, yeah.
Yeah, and suddenly like a half dozen people got goats and started making cheese. And the so it made me feel really excited about the possibility of building something out of nothing, as Modest Mouse would say.
Yeah. Good Modest Mouse quote.
Thank you.
So, well, we are almost out of time, but I want to ask. So we have listeners from all over
the guys,
place.
Hey, guys, I'm going to play a sponsor drop real quick before we finish that thought. And you guys are going to enjoy this one.
Okay, I'm going to enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio, and we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's and their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
Steve Jenkins, our hero. Let's hear it for Steve Jenkins.
Aww. Thank you, Jack.
So, as I was saying, we are running out of time, but there are some other great things to check out in the issue. There's a raw milk article. There's a great article about milk, not jails, about the intersection between our prison system and agriculture in upstate New York, which is really fascinating.
Blew my mind.
And so people can find your magazine online at ediblemanhattan.com, but people can also subscribe, right?
Yes.
Also at ediblemanhattan.com. Yes. Yeah, okay. Buy a subscription.
And the pictures are beautiful, so it's worth it. You should just get a subscription if you do not live in the New York area. It's a great thing. Well, thank you guys so much for being on this show.
Thank you so much for having us.
It is an honor.
And thank you especially for all of the
We're going to come back when the Brooklyn Dairy issue comes out, right?
Yes.
The 22nd. It went to the printer this morning.
Oh my goodness. There's more dairy in the
the works. That's so exciting. Well, and we hope to see everybody at the Big Dairy Showdown on the 25th.
Waterfalls of Milk.
April 25th.
Cheese rolling contest.
Open house gallery. Yeah.
On Mulberry Street. Yeah.
No cheese eating contest, but lots of good cheese to be eaten.
Tickets are just $25 and it's going to be awesome.
$25.
We should have
an
amateur cheese cutting and wrapping contest.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That would be great fun.
I'm high-fiving right here in the studio.
And maybe paper mache of some sort. That's always fun for parties. Okay, anyways, that was just me. So next Monday, we'll be back with another episode of Cutting the Curd. But till then, eat lots of cheese and be merry.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd.